I mean, this one, all this.
Oh, wait, is that the one you want to go on, Paige?
Yep.
The whole, this whole one slide.
Everything, just take.
And 12. We thank you for being here. And just to tell you, as we always do, that if you want to speak on any of the items on the agenda as they come up, just let us know by raising your hand. And then, if you will, just try to keep your comments, if you can, to 5 minutes. That would be good. As we begin our meeting, we'll have council prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let us pray. Holy God, give our council members clear minds and pure hearts as we undertake the task of approving a budget. Your advice to us is to love one another as you have loved us. Let us take this command and apply it this day in the dealings that will take place and the decisions we need to make. Help us to do the people's business. May clear heads prevail in all that we do. Give us an extra measure of courage, wisdom, and integrity. Protect our defenders of freedom at home and abroad as they protect us. Heal our wounded warriors with your touch. Remember those who have returned to your eternal care, especially Becky Evans. May perpetual light shine upon her now and forever. We ask these things in your name. Amen.
Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions necessary this evening to the agenda?
Mayor, Judson McAdams, I believe, is here in the room tonight. He's here on a rezoning application and has informed our host that he's not feeling well. Wondered if there were any way we could move that item. It's item number one under new business, the rezoning of property at 1103 Richland Avenue, if we could move that up in the agenda.
Okay, I don't have a problem. I think he's... I'd be fine to you. Anyone?
I have two things on issues and concerns. One is a procedural issue, and the other one, there's Miss Judy Miller would like to speak for a few minutes on Chucker Creek. That'll be at the end of the meeting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else? Can we have a show of hands, please? Motion and second.
I move that we approve the agenda as amended.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Passes unanimously. Okay, let's go through the minutes, and then we'll make that switch. Consideration of the minutes of May 14th meeting.
I do have Mr. Pierce is updating the two charts we talked about at the last meeting there, and I think part of his staff was out that did that, and we just need to include them in this meeting's minutes. Will be fine, and he's working on updating those.
All right.
Yeah, could we get copies of them as well?
Yeah, it should be in the minutes.
We'll be with them.
It'll be in the minutes. Okay. Fine. Thank you.
Okay. Good. Do we have a motion to second then to approve the minutes?
I so move.
Okay. Second. Second. Show of hands, please. All in favor. Passes unanimously. Okay. Moving that item number one, the first reading of an ordinance to rezone property at 1103 Richland Avenue East from light industrial to general business. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance to rezone certain property consisting of 1.24 acres of land owned by Benjamin Timmerman and others from light industrial to general business. In the packet in your materials, you'll see this property is in the exhibits that we attached to my memo. It is at 1103 Richland Avenue. It's zoned light industrial. The owners have asked to rezone that general business. The Planning Commission did review this request at their May 15 meeting and unanimously approved this request if the following conditions are imposed: proof of recording of a restrictive covenant at the Aiken County RMC office limiting the intensity of development of the entire 1.24 acres so that the net new vehicle trips to be generated is fewer than 3,000 trips per day. They would have to submit that had been recorded. That the applicant execute an agreement with the city listing all conditions and the agreement be recorded at the RMC and all of these conditions be met within 180 days. You do have the memorandum from the Planning Commission Chair Wilkins Bird in your materials for review. In the past, there have been some questions about how we monitor these conditions placed on the property. And as the city attorney can confirm, since it is a restrictive covenant and on record at the RMC office, any subsequent purchaser of the property would be under record notice that that condition was on there. We also have this ordinance in our documental archives that are available online and, of course, to all of our departments. The planning department keeps a written log in a binder in their offices, and we have a HTE computer system that we use for our permitting, and any time an application for a building permit is submitted, this note would come up for that property. So for consideration tonight on first reading is this ordinance to rezone the property from light industrial to general business at 1103 Richland Avenue.
Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor, for approval.
Okay. I second.
Okay. Any discussion?
I have a question while I'm making the motion to approve. Do we have any idea of what kind of business is being considered for that property?
The property is to be redeveloped. They propose to redevelop the property occupied by a vacant building.
I read that, but do we have any idea what kind of
business? It is not in the materials that I was supplied.
Right, how do you see that?
But anyway, whatever development, it would not generate more than 3,000 trips per day, so there's no need for traffic. So whatever they do to develop it, it would be subject to that condition that the Planning Commission put on.
Mr. McAdams, did you have anything you would like to add?
I'm sorry.
If you could come up to the microphone right here so they'll get you on the recording that we keep, just right up here where this laptop computer is.
Thank y'all for letting me sneak in. It's actually for a Family Dollar.
Okay.
So it's an 8,000 square foot retail store with a lot less than 3,000 trips a day.
Okay.
And we've been working with planning as far as it's going to be a nice building, all that stuff. It's in the historic district.
Okay. Let me ask your name again, please, because
it's Ross.
Ross.
Yeah, Hobson, H-O-B-S-O-N.
Thompson. Okay, Ross. Excuse me for not catching that earlier.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, judge my partner.
Okay. Any questions of Ross while he's here? Okay. We've got a motion and second. Show of hands, please. Passes unanimously.
Thank you very much.
On first reading. Thank you, sir. Hope you feel better.
And we will have this on the agenda, Mayor, for the second reading at our meeting on June 25th.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Under presentations, the first item is the Administration Finance Building Repurposing Report.
Thank you, Mayor. Council approved last fall purchasing the former First Citizens Bank building at 135 Loring Street. At that time, we entered into a conversation with Joseph M. Walker, Joe Walker, from Joseph M. Walker Construction Managers. And he has worked with us in Crossland Park and done an excellent job with our Crossland Park homes, meeting budget, and redeveloping those homes for sale. We've sold six of those homes so far. And, in fact, the closing on the seventh home is set for Monday, June 25th. We have about 10 or 11 homes in inventory at this time. And Joe was available, and we had him review the architect's estimates of repurposing the building on Lawrence Street. And we've entered into an agreement with him to repurpose that building. He was already on staff with us. He is a licensed contractor. And we've been working on the building ever since. And as I mentioned in our memo, the building is a solid, tight building. Even with all these heavy rains, we've had no gathering of moisture in any area of the building. When it was all shut up and we had some heavy rains earlier, I guess over the course of the winter, there really wasn't a lot of water anywhere to be found. So we've undertaken the abatement of the asbestos in the building. We've also cleaned out just since 1968, that many years of dust accumulation, and started with a clean building, and are in the process of replacing the elevator, the HVA system, the plumbing, the electrical systems. And Joe has been innovative at every step through the process about finding things we could reuse rather than replace the dated partitions in the restrooms, for example. He sent those to an auto body shop. We're just going to paint those. They'll be serviced very well and continue. So for $900, we've got new bathroom partitions. We were concerned about no restroom being on the main floor of the building, and Joe studied on that. Now we have accessible bathrooms that will be available not only for the public who visit the building, but for staff. And if we have special events, the way we can set it up, we'll have public restrooms available during events or festivals that might be held there. And there are just numerous examples throughout this process. We tore down the drive-through, and we had a perfectly good security glass drive-through window. So we found a way to repurpose that, put it in the building, and have security glass in the drive-through. All we had to do was clean that up and size the opening for the window. We used brick from the drive-through on the building because they matched to widen the steps and to put this drive-through in. So every time we turn around, there's a problem, but there's always a very innovative solution to that. So before I steal any of Joe's thunder tonight, we'll let him tell you about what all he's been doing on the building. Jeff?
Okay. Good evening.
Good evening. Mm-hmm.
My name is Joe Walker. I am the construction manager on the new administration and finance building on Lawrence Street. I would like to give you a brief report on some of the major construction choices which are driving our final product. These choices were made with the following ideas in mind. First idea was safety. In collaboration with Mike Jordan, we identified several safety issues. We have replaced the deteriorating front steps and repaired the side steps. We have added rails to the handicap ramp and have on hand the new rails for the front and side steps.
And that's the rails there, Jim?
Which is the rail that you see here. We have added hand and security rails on the interior stairs. We are in the process of constructing a new rear basement stairwell to allow for emergency egress. We are over halfway installing a new elevator. The old elevator did not meet South Carolina safety code. The building will be equipped with a code-adhering fire protection system. The second idea was health. With the help of Aces of Augusta, we identified the asbestos-containing building material and have abated all except some sheetrock. The remaining sheetrock will be encapsulated with a new layer of non-asbestos-containing sheetrock. The existence of lead in the painted surfaces was presumed. In concordance, all work on these surfaces has been done according to the lead renovation safety regulations of the EPA. A new building-wide fresh air system is being installed to bring adequate fresh air to each person in the building. All the plumbing fixtures are being secured from leaks and insured for proper ventilation. The third idea was a new floor plan. Number three. A new floor plan has been developed to meet the needs of the staff and the public. Two new handicap bathrooms have been roughed in on the first floor. The plan allows for easy access to both the finance counter on the main floor and to the drive-in at the rear of the building.
And Joe, that drive-through actually has a night drop as well?
Actually has a night drop as well. The plan allows for adequate office and workspace for the administration and finance staff. Number four idea was energy savings. The existing cracked, discolored, and single-glazed windows are being replaced by double-paned windows of high energy-efficient glass. The old dinosaur heating boiler and 25-ton air conditioning unit is being updated to Mitsubishi's split-zone AC heat pumps. These units are 21 SEER. This system allows each office and zone to be conditioned independently of the rest of the building. Number five, communication. The building is being connected to the city's fiber optic system. This will interconnect the new building with the police station and the existing city hall. Cat 5 data wiring is being installed throughout the building for the installation of computers and their phones. Number five. Number six is security. A new security system will be installed, which will be monitored from the police station. The new drive-through window has bullet-resistant glass. The inside tellers will be protected by a complete glass enclosure. Number seven, interior. Many choices have been made concerning the interior. These choices are that the walls are to be smooth, finished plaster and sheetrock, painted or covered with a wall covering. The ceiling will be 2x2 revealed sided acoustical tiles. The concrete floors will have suitable coverings that meet the demands of the area they serve. To help you visualize the interior design, I now call on Catherine Hirsch-Sasha, who in collaboration with a team from Nandina's Home and Design has put together a beautiful palette of interior decor. After Catherine speaks, we will be here to answer any of your questions.
Ms. Rideout, can we kill that row of lights so we could see the palette a little bit?
I'm going to redo this palette. Not quite right.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. That's great.
That's right. We had to cut these lights off. Okay.
Well, first, I just want to say thank you for having me. And just from all of Nandina, I just want to say that we really do appreciate being able to work on this project. Being able to work in the community is very important to us. So the board that we have here just shows a brief smattering of what the intended look for the building is. We decided to go with a look that is more hospitality-driven instead of commercial-driven. So hopefully the feeling of the building when it's done will be a little bit more like a hotel, like a residence, rather than just a commercial office space. We've chosen materials like these carpets here that are based on carpet tiles and nylon products that will be serviceable and easy to maintain. The products shown, like this wall covering here, simulate more of a residential look, more like plaster rather than wallpaper, but with the durability of a wallpaper instead of the plaster. And we've just taken careful time to make sure that the palette doesn't change from room to room, which often happens in a space that's developed not as a group. So we just are really hoping that the city appreciates the building and that it lasts a long time so that we don't have colors that are specifically picked from 2012. And we hope that we can help the city further in the rest of the building. So are there any questions?
Very good. Yeah, let's see if we have any questions. Any questions from council?
Great.
Well, thank you so much for what you've done. And Joe, did you like to say anything else? Thank you. I enjoyed the time I walked over. Richard and I walked over to see you and walked completely through the building. And it is really coming along great. Thank you for your leadership there and all you're doing.
Thank you, Mayor. And I would say sometime in the middle of August, we'll have the building cleaned up and the sheetrock up and sufficiently available so that the council can come over and take a look for themselves. Mm-hmm. Hope to see you there, and I'll be glad to get to that point.
Mr. Walker, do you see the building being completed on schedule and within budget?
The schedule says that we should be completed by the end of the year. I see it more toward Thanksgiving or later, a little bit around there. And I see it, the latest figures and our budget meeting today shows that the figures are right on, and we should be within our limit of money, because we will limit the number of things that we do on the building so that we can come in with the amount of money that the council has given us to.
We've got a budget of about $750,000. We've spent $226,000, and we're more than a third done with the project. Yeah. With all the revenue.
Question. What about furnishings? Are you to that stage where you've made that selection yet?
We'll move those from the first floor.
You will move them?
Yeah. Actually, the finance department went up to the state surplus because there were a couple of items they needed to replace. And they were buying credenzas for $30. They bought a very nice desk for $40. So we really think that the items we have shoved in a closet and kind of out of the way, or items that were kind of falling over, we'll have more space, because we've got an entire basement in that building for our work area, for storage. So we think it'll work a lot better. But basically, it'll just be moving what we have.
What specifically is Nandina's role? Are they consultants, design consultants?
They charge us $1,500, and they provided a good palette for us for the various installations in the interior.
And have we figured out what we're going to call this? Because I think it's another one of these railroad depot things that I've seen it. Two or three different names on it.
I think we've got to decide that at some point.
We need to settle
it. Dick Doer,
sure.
Municipal Building.
No, thank
there
you.
We go. No. There we go. Actually, we were just planning on calling it the Administration and Finance Building for the City of Aiken. Yeah.
That's fine. And then we would call this building the Municipal Center still?
Yeah. Well, this would be your conference center.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a question for Mr. Walker. How much of this are you doing yourself, and how much are you contracting with small businesses to? Based on what you're doing.
How much are we doing with?
How much of it are you doing independent with the electrical? Are you doing all the electrical and everything yourself, or are you contracting?
No, the major mechanicals have to have behind them a state mechanical license. Mm-hmm. So the plumbing, the heating and air conditioning, and the electrical work are being done by specific subcontractors in that
that field?
To carry that license.
Okay.
There are other things that are being subbed out and to people that are competent in the business. The glass contract is being subbed to a local contractor called Mena Building Supplies that has a glass company called Bailey Glass Company within Mena Building Supplies. The acoustical tile is being subbed to a local contractor. The sheetrock work will be to a local contractor. So in this building, and in the money that we're spending, we are employing many local businesses. Yeah, and we're buying mainly from local vendors, Mena Building Supplies, the Park Avenue Paints.
And even the True Value Hardware stores, the downtown business
front. So the money is
being spent locally.
Okay.
Joe, again, thank you for all your effort. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I'm Bill McGee, and I live at 217 Fairfield Street, Northeast Aiken. Mr. Pierce and I have discussed the process, the procurement process on this project before, and also the preceding project, I guess, at Crosland Park, where Mr. Walker did, I guess, most of the work over there.
He's the general contractor.
I guess my question is, this is sort of unique in what the city has done before as far as procurement. And it seems like this is a sole source, because the only competitive request I've seen come out of this project was the HVCA type project.
Well, actually, Mr. McGee, Mr. Walker is a licensed professional, and he was selected for the Crosland Park project as a licensed professional. And then that was also the selection process for the general contracting work. The HVAC did go out to formal bid, as did the the HVAC and then the electrical work. Then on the other items, we get into specialty areas like elevator replacement and so forth, but we did see competitive bids on that as well.
So the award to Mr. Walker was not competitive. It was sole source?
It was professional services.
Professional services.
What does that mean?
Licensed professional services. We don't have to go to competitive bid for those under our procurement phase.
Architects, lawyers, those kind of people, you're allowed to be selective, or the city's allowed to be selective in who they pick when they're desiring professional services.
General contractors too, sir?
That's all.
Yes.
And that issue came up with Crosland Park, and you know that's what we made council aware then.
Now, what's the role of the general contractor? The general contractor has a role in picking the subcontractors?
No. Actually, with the formal bids, we awarded the formal bids. We've been working with Larry's group and George Brenton as far as some of the specialty work, like the elevator work and so forth.
Yeah, I've seen that in the issues bids. And answers. You know,
yes,
we have two of them for this particular building and today's issue and answers. But, I mean, in terms of sheetrock and so forth.
That was all competitively priced. We got estimates, you'll remember, from Cameron Scott, the architect. He gave us kind of an estimated budget. And again, working with staff and with Joe, for example, the architect had estimated the elevator refurbishment would be about $45,000. Well, of course, Otis Elevator has the elevator here, so we naturally called Otis Elevator. Well, they told it was going to be $161,000. So we went to two other specialty contractors and wound up with Kone. They're actually replacing the elevator for about $70,000 as the low bid.
Okay.
So if you are labeled as a licensed professional services, we can eliminate the bidding process.
There's no formal bid in acquiring those services.
Okay, if you have that credential.
That's right.
Okay. Item 2 under presentations is a city solicitor report on city court activities and trials. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Paige Tiffany has been with us since March 26 of this year, and she's prepared to come forward and make a presentation at this time about her efforts that she's come on the job. In your monthly activities report, you do have the Aiken Public Safety's report in the back. And there is a section that pertains to Paige's efforts. You'll see a year ago, year-to-date was 463 jury cases disposed, with 66 in the month of May. And Paige's numbers are actually 538 cases disposed year-to-date, with 70 disposed in the past month. She's been very helpful to us. She's done a great job. The officers are enjoying working with her. As a prosecutor, it's not just dealing with the officers, though. You've got defense attorneys and defendants who represent themselves and victims of crime. And poor Paige has to try to make everyone at least aware of the procedure that's being followed in court. She's also helped us with a review that we said we would undertake with some of our city codes to see if they need updating. So, Paige?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Pierce. And I want to thank you also to the council for the opportunity to serve as city solicitor. I've very much enjoyed the past few weeks and hope that I can earn the opportunity to stay for many more weeks to come. But first, I just want to give an overview of the types of cases that I see in municipal court. Over the past year, just on average, the officers write around 395 citations that come to municipal court. Of course, you know, we're not counting right now what goes to general sessions. So it's just what comes before Judge Carroll on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday mornings, right down there in public safety. So around 395 citations are written by our public safety officers. And out of those, believe it or not, around 370 are resolved without any or very little, if any, interaction with me or my office. Those are traffic tickets that people come and pay the fine or any number of citations. They just go ahead and pay it, plead guilty, or forfeit the amount and move on down the road, and we never have to actually interact with them as far as the city solicitor's office has to do. Now, about 25 per month actually ask for a jury trial. And that's just an average over the past year that we pulled those numbers from. And on average, around 10 of those are DUIs, around 4 are property crimes, which would have to do with maybe breach of trust or simple larceny or something like that. Around 3 have to do with assault and battery or CDV, which is criminal domestic violence. Around 3 are simple possession of marijuana, and around 5 are other. You know, we have trespassing after notice. We have unlawful use of the telephone, any number of different charges that may fall into that last category. That's just kind of an overview of about what, if people are asking for a jury trial, generally what they're for. And this is just a bar graph of what I just told you. 395 a month average come into municipal court. Around 370 resolve themselves without my help or my office's help. Around 25 people request a jury trial, which really comes into my purview. That's when it gets my attention. Somebody asks for a jury trial, then it's mine. Other than that, unless an officer asks for my assistance, which they do on occasion about how to dispose of a case, unless it's a jury trial, it's really theirs and not mine, so to speak. Over the past year, there have been 160 jury trials on average pending per month. The beginning of the year was a little bit higher than that. Right before our former solicitor left, it got down a little bit lower. But generally, for the past 12 months, it's been about 160. Around 30 cases per month have been resolved over the past year, per month. And over the past year, 25 cases have been requested per month, average. Now, the downside to that is most of the cases have a little bit of age on them. The average age of pending cases, and this is a very rough estimate, is over 180 days, which is about 6 months, which is not ideal. Justice Toll from the South Carolina Supreme Court has requested that all magistrate and municipal courts keep cases under 120 days, 90 days ideally, which is very aggressive. But I think 120 days average would be a goal, worth achieving and trying to achieve. When I came on March 26th, April 1st was my first new month. We had 167 pending jury trials. That month we resolved 19, but we got 19 new ones. So I kind of just status quo from our first 4 weeks, which is better than backsliding, I guess. Well, my second month was much better. I resolved 47 in 1 month. I only got 20 new ones, and so I made gains of 27 cases and brought it down from 167 pending jury trials to 140, which is much closer to where we ideally would like to be. I think by the end of the year, I would like to have only 100 pending jury trials, and so if you would have 25 on average that are requested, that there wouldn't be a jury trial more than 4 months old. It would be the goal. And the average age would be 120 days. That's my conservative estimate for the end of the year. Hopefully we can do better than that. But this is just a bar graph in what I just told you, that the backlog was 160 through the average for the past year. 30 were the resolved per month of the past year. 25 new ones were requested. We really had about an average of one jury trial per month for the past year. That's neither here nor there. But this, I just want to show you a projection of where we are and where I would like to be. At the end of March, beginning of April, we were at 167. At the end of April, beginning of May, we were at 167. And now we're, you know, at the end of May, beginning of June, we're at 140. And then just to show you a little bit more, that the goal is 100 pending jury trials and 120 days average. And my goal, my projection would be to, by the end of June, to be at 130, and by the end of July to be at 120, and so forth until we reach 100 around the end of September. But the good news is that we're already towards the middle of June, and it's June 11th, and I've already moved around 23 more cases. So we're actually about a month and a half ahead today. So I hope that to achieve that before my projection, but I don't want to promise too much that I can not achieve.
The number of defendants with trials, it's 124, you said?
124 pending jury trials, that's correct.
Right now?
Mm-hmm. Right now.
When you say you move cases, can I assume that's a trial, or do you sometimes get a plea deal?
No, we move cases any number of ways. Clearly, you can't try every single case. A case would take about 2 to 3 days to prepare and to try. And so if you had 25 cases a month, well, I'm an English major.
Run out of days.
We'd likely not need a lot more prosecutors and a lot more trial time. And the truth of the matter is, very few cases actually go to trial, because once you, get all the evidence and, you look at what the pros and cons and what's actually going on, somebody is going to say, it's not worth it for me to go to trial. Either the city says, I don't have the evidence to go forward, and it's unethical for me to go forward. Or the defense says, man, you have me dead to right. We're going to lose this. And the defendant in that situation doesn't want to go through the trauma of a jury trial just to lose. And so a lot of them are resolved once after all the discovery comes out, before it ever goes to trial. And so when you say we dispose of one, I either have to dismiss it because the elements don't meet, rise to the level of the charge. We negotiate it, meaning, well, it's a DUI. You're definitely guilty, but we can work with you on the fine amount. And so you'll get a guilty plea, but help them save some money, maybe. That's just an example. Or it's a scenario in which they just, plead guilty and, we all move on down the road. But most cases are resolved without a trial. Yeah.
You end up dropping a lot of cases?
Well, and, that's something we've been watching. It's not my goal to achieve a current docket by dumping cases. I absolutely contract all the officers before I do anything. If we null pross a case or dismiss a case, it's maybe a situation where it is a plea negotiation where you plead to the DUI and you null pross the open container. That really doesn't help my stats very much, to be honest with you, because that's considered one case anyway. But you have to be careful before you dismiss a case. So, it's not something I'm, am looking to do.
When you came in, Paige, were you focusing more on the pending cases, the ones that were over 120 days old? Did you come in focusing on those, or maybe some that, and I don't know, the pending cases, I guess they were still pending. Maybe they didn't have enough evidence or whatever to go to trial. How did you...
That's a good question. I actually had some real good advice from Judge Pat Sullivan before I came. He said, so everybody can fall into the trap of just focusing on the old cases, and then the new cases get old too.
Right.
He said, so my advice to you would be to focus on the old cases and the new cases and, attack it from both ends until you get to the center, which has been nice. We have many different lists. Some lists are in alphabetical order. Some lists are in age order. Some lists are in officer shift order. And so, you know, the list, I look at it a different day. You know, it's not just the age, because I agree with you that to work on just the oldest cases isn't the best idea, because they're usually not your best cases. Usually the old cases are old for a reason. And that's where a lot of times I call the officer and I'm like, okay, this is 2 years old. What's wrong with this?
You know? The average length of time for a trial.
I would imagine I can get all my trials done in a day and hopefully a morning. It all depends on the defense attorney you're working against and the complexity of the issues. You know, a jury trial, a DUI trial can last 2 days. But if it's, you know, if it's that complex, usually there's issues in which maybe I need to reconsider pursuing the charge.
Are we in a situation, or have we been in a situation, or would you anticipate we get in a situation where the backlog that you have is impeding public safety from continuing to add to that backlog?
That's what's so important about looking at the docket, the age of it. And I would say, as a solicitor's office of one right now, which I am, and you know, it was important for me to get into the cases and understand what each case was before I brought anybody on and like to help me with the cases. I needed to know what I had. I think as a solicitor's office of one, I can very well handle 100 cases. If that's all I do. Now, once I like hopefully expand into other civil areas, such as, you know, Board of Zoning or things like that, and take on more other responsibilities than just prosecution, absolutely, that I would need, you know, some assistance that the city has already afforded me and the opportunity to hire a deputy solicitor or independent contractor. So.
Paige, how many of these folks that you go through jury trial with, or even they settle and it's not a jury trial, how many of them do you see come back over time? How many revolving folks do we have that you've noticed so far that just keep coming back to the system?
Well, we have a drinking tree in Aiken. It's behind Kent's Corner.
A what?
A drinking tree. People like that, they'll go sit under the tree and get arrested for public intoxication over and over and over and over again. And, you know, I don't know if that's how much you can stop. I have not seen, you know, people get a DUI more than once or twice, you know, before they'll, you know, come, you know, stop getting arrested for that. I think that's fortunate.
Yeah.
Simple possession of marijuana, I do see come back quite often, and drug paraphernalia. You know, I've only been there a few weeks, but we do have people called the frequent flyers, I guess. That I'm just learning to, and the officers will know who they are. Like, oh, we see them 100 times, and then you open up the rap sheet, and there it'll be. But
are those people referred to Aiken Center for Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse Services, or?
Oh, absolutely. I can spout Judge Carroll's speech by heart, I think. you know, there's help out there. You know, that their doors open every day of the week, but only you can want the help. You know, if you come to here any day of week, I'll give you their number. I'll give you their name. We'll have somebody take you down there. But you got to want to go.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. They get lectured every morning. Judge Carroll does a great job of lecturing.
You know, I ask that question only because from time to time, and I haven't heard it. I haven't heard it here in Aiken, but you hear from time to time, you know, what's the use, you know? You go through the court case, you sentence them, serve the time, and then they're out there. And here they come back again.
But you help so many other people in the process.
We're not help. Oh, I know you do. Uh-huh. But, and that's not... That's not a concern of yours or anyone in the position that you're in, of course, but it's an overall concern, I think. Perhaps these people, there should be some laws strengthened whereby, I mean, how many times can you keep coming back without getting a higher sentence or something?
You're right, and that is a concern that I have, that sometimes that they're charged with simple possession of marijuana first offense or DUI first offense when it's really a second or a third. And, you know, sometimes it's a mistake, and sometimes, you know, it's not. And that's just something we kind of need to address, whether or not we're ever going to take those kind of charges or we're going to send them up to General Sessions. But once you send them up to General Sessions, I mean, it may be years before it's done. I mean, we have a really quick resolution process here while, you know, we're on weeks and months. You know, sometimes I feel like they're on months and years.
Sure, Sure.
Paige, thank you so much for what you've done for us thus far. Is there any additional support from public safety that would help? Is there anything that we could do to help?
Thank you. Thank you for asking. And that question's been asked of me from Stuart, assistant manager, from Mr. Pierce, manager, and from many of the officers, and everyone has been extremely gracious and supportive thus far. And so I can't even tell you that there's anything I need, but I also feel like if there was something that I needed that I feel comfortable enough to ask. So I think we're working well together right now.
I got a quick question. If somebody says they want a jury trial, then the morning of the hearing, they say, no, I'd like to settle out of court. Do they revert back to the original fine? I'm talking driving or something. Or do you actually negotiate a fine?
That's a good question. And that's part of what is very important about being a strong prosecutor, is that the deal is not the morning of. The deal is prior to picking the jury trial, because we're not bringing six people in from, you know, the community to come sit in a jury box for you to take the deal that I offered you a month ago. Mm-hmm. So that's part of what's important for me, to let, you know, the defense bar know that the deal isn't the morning of, the deal is before. You know, sometimes when dealing with pro se, it's a little bit harder to, be as aggressive, because they don't understand the process as much. Of course, you know, some of them do. But anyway, so, and that's very important, not to give them the deal the morning of. You're right.
A quick question. Everybody says the police department is on a fundraising venture when they start giving out tickets and so forth. What happens to the money that the court finds and collects? I assume the court costs go directly to the court, and does it go up to the state? And
it's a very complex process that, you know, unfortunately I'm not in charge of, because I'm an English major. I wouldn't have anything to do with that. You know, some of it goes to the state, some of it stays here, some of it goes everywhere else.
The court costs go to court administration, and it's the bulk of the fine. Many times it's 2/3 of the fine.
Okay.
Yeah. So no, it doesn't. There are no ticket quotas, and Chief Baranco has been very adamant that he doesn't put quotas out there. And in fact, our revenue is actually down from last year, but we're moving more cases. So.
Paige, I think you answered this before, but just to ask it again, because it's always been a concern of all of us, I think. Is any effects of some of these longer cases that you haven't got to, not you, but we haven't, collectively, we haven't gotten to yet, that are having any effect on our public safety officers that you know of? I mean, whereby they just...
I would think that if there was a charge out there that has not been pursued, and you're not communicating to them why, like, for example... There is one case I have that's fairly old, where the defense attorney is stationed overseas, but he's coming back. And so it's either make him pay another fee to get another defense attorney, or wait till he comes back in a few months. But as long as you communicate that with an officer, they're fine. I think what would be discouraging is if they went out there and made a charge that we're sitting on because we just don't want to prosecute that, you're not communicating to, or they think that. Because you're not telling them what's wrong.
Absolutely. The communication is so important.
And they have expressed that to me, that they're like, you know, can you just tell us what's going on? I'm like, sure, why wouldn't I tell you? So I'll email them on every single case I have and ask them to call me if I feel like I have to dismiss a case, and talk to them why. They have always been receptive and appreciative of anything I had to say. And I've always told them, if there is a case that you feel very strongly about that you don't want me to negotiate for whatever reason, like you've seen him 100 times before, he's threatened your life or whatever it is, you just let me know. You know, I'll draw the hard line on that one. You know, but, you know, a lot of times there's a lot of negotiating between a $1,000 fine and a $400 fine. And I'm one to tend to let you do the $400 fine if you're going to plead guilty. You know, just to move it down the road, but I don't have to. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for what you're doing.
I can't let this go without making some comments. And folks that know me know that I've got a passion for some of the stuff we're dealing with as it relates to recidivism and offenders. I can easily sit here and say that it is by choices that people get into trouble. Those who make good choices good things happen. Those who make bad choices, there are consequences. But it's not as easy as that. And what I hear almost daily with the recidivism offenders, that they've gotten a record. They can't find a job. Nobody will hire them because they've got a record. I've seen the evidence. I've seen some that say it, and they're not really looking, but some are truly looking and can't find anything. Some can pay their fines because and fees because they can't find a job, and then they're fined or they're arrested. And so it's a vicious cycle for these folks. And we don't know about the families, some of the families that some of these folks come from, and the poverty that exists. All you have to do is go over to Schofield and listen to the principal over there, and she will tell you some of the things that the stories about children and the environment they're living in. So it's not so cut and dry that let's just, if they're breaking the law, let's lock them up. But they're, as a community, as good stewards with good character, there's something more that we've got to do in terms of helping these families. Mm-hmm. And the children can't be held totally responsible.
I agree. So. And I'm always one, if they want to do try some community service to work off the fine, you know, I'll always, you know, let them do that. It's really not about money, you know, a lot of times, oftentimes. Actually, Mr. Pierce had suggested that I try and start the juvenile court back up, where juveniles have an alternative rather than going through family court and the judicial system to something that is a non-judicial process, but they still kind of go through a quasi-judicial process. It doesn't end up with a criminal record, which, you know, would help in situations like that, too.
Yeah, that was our youth court, and they actually are adjudicated by their peers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as far as the concerns that you've expressed, Ms. Price, of course, the expungement is available, too, to help clear those records, and there are folks that are willing to help with that process.
That's not as easy.
Expungement, it's expensive, too, isn't it?
I don't know how they get them.
I don't think it's free.
Not as easy and cut and dry as it appears.
No, I'm not saying it's cut and dry. I'm just saying it's available, too.
But you're right. I see it every day, too, there. Let me try.
Paige, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Good job you're doing. Okay, and old business appointments to boards and commissions and committees. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. We've got two appointments for Council's consideration tonight. Council Member Deeks has recommended the reappointment of Todd Lista to the Accommodations Tax Committee. That reappointment would mean his term would expire March 25th of 2014. And you've recommended Mayor Hank Moorman for reappointment to the Building Code Board of Appeals. That term expires May 12, 2014. We've got six pending appointments for potential vacancies to be filled, but for consideration tonight is the appointment of Todd Lista and Hank Moorman to their respective committees.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
I move approval of the appointments, Mr. Mayor.
A second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item two is the second reading.
Mr. Mayor, I'm sorry. I forgot to tell you for to be placed on the next agenda.
I'm very sorry.
I do have a replacement on the Arts Commission. I had a resignation from Keisha Lloyd Kennedy, and I have spoken with Dr. Jack Benjamin from USC Aiken School of, he's the professor of visual and performing arts, and he's agreed to serve in that capacity. So for consideration for the next meeting, I'd like that added to the agenda.
Okay. Anyone else?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, Andrew Baltnight. This committee only meets as needed, but he's there to serve. So reappointing him, please.
Okay, anyone else? Okay. We approve those appointments.
We did.
Second reading then.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Second reading of public hearing of an ordinance to set the millage rate for fiscal year 2012-2013.
Thank you, Mayor. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance to provide for the levy of taxes for ordinary city purposes and for capital development purposes in the city of Aiken for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2012, set the millage at 62 mills and to provide for the expenditures thereof. This is our annual millage ordinance. As we discussed at our prior meeting on May 14, we set the millage to ensure the appropriate amount of revenue in order to adopt a budget. This millage rate at 62 mills represents a continued reduction in the millage rate for over 24 consecutive years. And this is for second reading, public hearing, and approval.
Okay, do we have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved, Mr. Mayor, we adopt this ordinance to set the millage rate for fiscal year 2012-2013.
And as we mentioned earlier, if there's anyone in the audience that wants to speak on any of these items, you may do so.
Did you have a second?
A second.
Did we have a second? We did. Who seconded it?
I didn't hear a second.
No. I second.
Okay. All right. If not, any discussion from council?
What I'd like to show again, Fred, is the chart that I showed last time, which Mr. Pierce is updating. If Mr. Stewart could show that.
Okay.
And Mr. Pierce and I, as well as Mr. Ledoux and I, have had some, you know, gone over some discussions for the last 3 years. Obviously, our and I'm talking general fund now because your enterprise funds are in a different piece of the budget. And we've just gone over the water and the sewer. I think and Mr. Pierce did the preliminary stuff, and you had asked him to update the numbers to be sure they were actual numbers versus what the estimated. But from the other numbers, I've seen that.
We're good, Steve.
And I think the thing that we are looking at, if you, and I used inflation of 2%, and I mentioned how I got that. The state retirement fund is using 2.3. The federal government uses a rolling average of 3.3. So I went very conservative. And you can see the blue trend is where we are. And when you look at the gap down here, it's a pretty healthy gap. And obviously, I know that the city manager has looked at that and I guess convinced me that we're okay, you know, this year. But we're going to have a trend up before long, or we do, you know, we're going to run out of money to spend. Mm-hmm. We still got to do the things we have to do to keep the city going. So I just make the point to you that be sure we don't step off in the deep end and have a crisis coming up in a couple of years. We don't have a problem this year, but if this continues for a couple more years, we do get into we are going to get into some other issues here. So that's just information only.
Okay, while we're on that subject, what are we going to do to correct that?
Well, what we've done is contained our expenditures. We've also looked for grant money. That's the reason for applying for the weatherization grant, for example, in Crossland Park. That's a three-year grant that we're receiving from EPA. And then we're also trying to look at, you know, other revenue sources. We have some sources that are reduced in this budget. I'm thinking of the local government fund and the dual taxation money provided to us by the county. While they're not individually large amounts of money, they're still revenues that we had in the past we don't have now. So it's just something we continue to monitor. We actually had, we expect to have more in the business license income that we've had in the past. And there was another item, too, that I had sent out to council.
I think it's the excise tax. We're hoping that'll increase, but.
Well, there was one.
And this includes the money we're getting.
This is
from
the general
the vehicle.
Yeah, and this is general revenue fund. It's
right,
not
right.
The enterprise funds or any of those.
That's right. We're seeing the increases, for example, in our vehicle tax money. So some of that replaces the dual taxation money. But it, as Mr. Ebner's pointed out, as far as gaining ground in revenue, we, at best we've been holding our own and containing expenses. So what we'll continue to do is monitor the money that does come in to see if we see any trend that's going to attract inflation.
But the frustration is that this is not like a business where we can look at revenue and expenses on a monthly basis because, as the city manager has pointed out, a couple of our people don't give us money until the very last day.
Oh, you got it. I mean, and, like 4:59
yeah.
on June 30th, if it's a business.
Not casting aspersions on anybody in the room. But that does pose a challenge because you really just can't get a sense of whether you're behind. So it forces us to be very deliberate in our budget and not spend. And I've got a couple of questions when we get to the budget.
and not spend money that we really don't need to. We're going to have a heck of a challenge trying to find the money to maintain the center, the senior slash youth center. I mean, if we compute how much money that's going to need, because what Reggie's saying is within another couple of years, we're losing purchase power of about $2.5 million. That's a lot of money.
So now I just want to, we've discussed it. I want to be sure that we're taking a look when we do the millage rates, because our other sources haven't been going up either. And
again, our millage rate is capped based on the total reassessed value in the population growth, and that's set by the state. So the most we could charge would be 62.2, as I pointed out in the memo before, but we've always just used a whole number instead. That's why we've done the 62 recommended value.
Well, it's something we need to look at close another couple of years of this, and it is going to cause us some heartache. You either got to have more revenue coming in, or you got to start cutting somewhere. So thank you, Mr. Stewart.
Or raise taxes, which we don't want to do.
That's right.
Haven't done.
Very much a last resort.
Let me raise a question.
Could you give that exhibit to the clerk, please?
We're at 62 mills because we choose to be at 62 mills. Mm-hmm. We could, if we wanted to. Nobody wants to. I can't think of anybody who wants to. But we could raise that above the 62 mills based on the rate of growth. There's two factors.
Population growth
use.
And the, population the reassessment, growth. Right. Yeah. And again, the highest we could be was 62.2. That's the cap.
I thought the 62.2 was the cap based on the reassessment.
Well, no, because that's why my memo says we could set this rate as high as 62.2. That's the cap.
With Aiken County's review of property reassessments, including their appeal hearings, that's my understanding of how we get to the 62.2, which we've agreed to be 62.
Right.
But separate and apart from that, any council can raise their millage rate based on population growth and CPI. We have chosen not to. Is that not correct?
In changing the mills, there's a formula that you can do an annual adjustment based on the population and the CPI. If you were going to change the millage, there's an entirely different process you'd have to go through.
Yeah,
but you could do it.
This
is saying is what you could do.
Yes,
I'm not saying we want to do that.
No, I've never heard people say they wanted to.
Well, as I said, nobody wants to, and we couldn't even, in fact, put in what we didn't put in last year. But so we're making a conscious decision not to raise property taxes. That's my point.
We're basically going with a CPI adjustment to the millage rate when you think about it.
Right.
That's what the statute permits.
Yeah. How about our reserve accounts?
Okay, we'll agree to disagree. It's not important.
We're good on the reserve accounts. You'll recall the auditor said you need to have between 3 and 6 months in reserve. We have a little over 5 months in reserve with this budget.
Yeah.
And that's perfectly acceptable. There's no warning bells or red flags being waved over that.
So, again, in a pinch, you could use some of that money.
Yes. That's right.
So it's not like we're in dire straits right now, as it's been said. I mean, we've got time here to do some things without using that money.
I think the key is, Mr. Mayor, we don't want to have to go to, is it LGIP? I get those initials messed up sometime.
You got it right. Local government.
We don't want to have to go for, what is that, bridge loan some of the cities have to get because they don't have enough reserve.
That's a TAN, tax anticipation note.
And we sure don't want to get in that position at all. And that shows you got a budget problem, and we don't want to show that.
Well, you remember the presentation by Ed Driggers from Greer. I mean, that's exactly what happened to Greer when he went up to the council and said, we can go right ahead and keep on spending the money at this rate. You will have no money after April 30th. The problem is your fiscal year doesn't end until June 30th.
Yeah, and I think that's stuck in the back of my mind very well, that we sure don't want to get to the point that, because then it shows you're in budget trouble. So, anyway, I think it's FYI and another year or two of this, Mr. Mayor, we have to get serious about doing something. Okay, thank you.
Very good.
I got a question, Richard. If you keep projecting those lines that Reggie worked up on his chart, is there a get-well date sometime or another when the two converge again, where the revenues kind of meet? I mean, is it based on business growth, or are we betting on a come on more business licenses, or?
Well, we certainly would be able to do more in the budget if we had more revenue. And, you know, of course, when I'm out and touring around and going through the different departments and I see staff and I say, you know, what, just as we've done with Paige, we do with other staff members, you know, what do you need? Well, what are you short on? What can we help you with? And everybody always likes to, you know, give me a good poke in the ribs and say more money. They want more salary. And the answer to that is that'd be great. We'd be glad to pay more salary, but we need more revenue. We don't have the revenue to pay more salary because of the commitments and the mandates we talked about in the budget book. So, again, it's a matter of every budget has to balance, because every budget's going to be audited to make sure it correctly reports the money that came in and the money that went out. So that's the restriction.
Now, the talkback's not a Bible, so I'm not sure how reliable it is, but seems like somebody was saying that the public safety folks had not had a raise in 5 years.
Right, and that's not true. That's not true at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, public safety, along with all the city employees, have received an increase in salary every single year.
Okay.
Yeah, now whether that's kept up with inflation, I'm not here prepared to say that, but, you know, in an era where I was going to the manager's meeting and so many managers from other cities were talking about reductions in force, frozen positions, no new hires. You know, we kept staff, we replaced staff, we froze very few positions, and we were just very conservative with how we spent our money. And we've been able to keep, you know, a full workforce except for about four positions or so. I think I talked about your last meeting. Mm-hmm.
I just figured you'd clear that up a little bit.
Yeah, I appreciate
it. A lot of bad rumors floating around.
I appreciate that. And it's unfortunate that folks are under that impression. But, you know, sometimes people will take a cost of living or an increase that's supposed to help offset inflation as something that they're entitled to. Mm-hmm. And everybody needs to understand that revenue has to equal expenditure. Just like when you're flying your plane, takeoffs have to equal landings. That's always important, right? Exactly.
But it's correct to say that staff hasn't had a cost of living increase.
They've had increases.
They've had an increase, but
that's
not
right.
A cost of living.
They're like every one of us. We've all had to kind of look very carefully at our expenditure.
Sure. Okay.
Let me ask a question regarding the millage, and this is in your memo, and some of us know this already. In terms of, in 2008, we changed the millage from 71 to 60. Six mills.
You did.
And you wonder, as you look at the change, whether and addressing your concern, Mr. Ebner, whether that was a reduction that we should have made or maintain it constant in terms of getting us avoiding problems with our budget in the future.
And we tried to file that. Follow the state formula to make sure that we didn't do any undue increases. Yeah.
The bottom line is we've not wanted to raise taxes.
And we still don't.
And we haven't in 24 years.
That's
now,
been...
will there come a time when we have to do it? Maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
I think that if I'm recalling right, that adjustment which we went through when we had to pass that back several months ago, I think it was either 1.72 or something like that would have been the allowed increase above the 62.2. It came out just under 64 or something like that. That would have been the legal allowed amount.
No, I think the 62.2 is what was legally allowed. I double-checked that with finance.
And you did, and yeah. That was with the including the growth rate and stuff.
That's my understanding from my discussions with finance. 62.2 was the max.
Very good. My mistake.
No.
What additional revenue would the 62.2 bring in, Richard?
The .2?
.2. Mm-hmm.
$30,000. Just under $31,000.
Not worth it to do that.
Okay. Now we're finished with this. We've got a motion and a second. I think
yes.
We need approval now.
Right.
Show of hands, please, for approval of the millage rate. Okay, passes unanimously. Item 3, second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to approve the FY 12 to 13 budget. Mr. Pierce, please.
Yes, Mayor. The title of this ordinance is an ordinance adopting a budget proposed by the city manager containing estimates of proposed revenues and expenditures by the city of Aiken for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2012 and ending June 30, 2013, and declaring that it shall constitute the budget of the city of Aiken. We had a work session on April 30th. We also had a session on May 14th when you approved the budget on first reading. There were a number of questions that Councilmember DeWar sent out, and I provided those responses to him and the rest of council. I've been over the major areas. This is for consideration as second reading and adoption of the hearing. Excuse me, this is the second reading and public hearing for adoption of a budget for the next fiscal year, which will start July 1.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second. Okay, second. Any discussion?
Absolutely. First, just a general question. I keep saying I learn something new about this every year. On the back of the ordinance, in fact, it's on page 54. There's a bunch of sections, five sections, funds obtained from any sources may be used for any of the appropriation. I think it's designed to give the city manager the flexibility to run the city with a budget that we're going to approve. And I only have one question, as I know that we have that we specifically need to approve a change of in the budget of $25,000 or more. Can you clarify how that comes in with all of these statements that seem to indicate you can do whatever you need to do to?
It would be unbudgeted items. If there's money in the budget, I'm just trying to think where we've done that.
We did it once a couple of years ago, and I don't remember what it was.
I'm sorry, Mr. DeWar, without you know, advance notice, I can't off the top of my head.
I don't expect you to have
up. But you know, that is just to give us discretion to move the money. You budgeted the money to expend it for a project, or for maintenance, or for depreciation, or what have you. And anything, any expenditure that is not budgeted, that's over $25,000, I'm going to come to you and get approval.
That's what's got to come to us for approval.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
I think, if I'm recalling correctly, Mr. Morris can correct me, but a little over a year ago, we had the blowout of the sewer line or stormwater line, and we had to, you had to come back for.
Thank you.
There was two projects. There were emergencies being there.
That's right. See, they were unbudgeted. They were over $25,000. I'm coming to you with an ordinance on that.
Yep, that's correct.
Yes.
And I just have a couple of questions, more than a couple, but not too many. I had asked that I'd be able to look at the budgets by department from year to year. Now, I'm embarrassed to say that might be in the city report, and if it is, just tell me and I'll.
The best place to look is that comprehensive annual financial report. It has several years worth.
That will tell me the parks recreation budget. I'll look at that for the last 3 or 4 years and
should,
the safety.
It should be
works.
In there depending on what you're looking for, Mr. DeWar. If not, we've got the budget books in our office, and you're more than welcome to come look at those.
See, that's the problem with the budget books. You get some of it in each. You know, you get salaries here and. It's sort of spread out, so it's hard to look at. I couldn't find a statement in our budget that says this is how much we're spending on public safety. The pages you reference, the yellow pages, are all wages.
That was salaries. I thought that's what you were asking.
No, I was looking for total expenditure by department, so I could say.
Okay, it is broken out by division, and then the summary in the front shows by department.
Is it? Okay.
Well, yes. It's in the book.
All right. I just apologize for not finding it.
No, it's all right. I mean, if you need some specific pages or reference or whatever, we'll be glad to provide that to you.
No, you've always been very helpful in giving me information.
I hope so.
I notice we're spending a lot of money on the Woodward House, and I guess I have to ask the question, do we really need that?
Now, we're spending $0 on the Woodward House this year for any capital improvements. There was a request for paving the parking lot, and I zeroed that out.
Okay, we spent $50,000 in 09 and $120,000 in 2010, so.
Yes, we did an exterior, interior upfit, and then redid the detached garage.
In item number 10 of my memo, I asked about the increase in overtime, and I guess I was expecting that once we got these new teams on to fix the water leaks, that that overtime would come down.
That is the mission I've given Mr. Morris, yes, sir.
When do we actually expect these new workers to be physically fixing leaks?
Well, it's a process of advertising, hiring. Then they're going to do, like with public safety, they do a field training period of time, so they'll actually learn on the job. Then we have to purchase the equipment, then they'll be out there and going.
Where are we in the process?
We've advertised the positions. We don't have any money appropriated yet because that happens tonight, we hope.
Yeah.
But we are going forward in hiring some folks. Unfortunately, we had to let a group of about six go. So we're replacing those six and then adding the six.
I guess I'm frustrated because it seems like it's taking us so long to hire these people. And are we going to hire and then we buy the equipment, or are we ordering the equipment?
We wanted to make sure the budget got approved, and of course that'll be July 1 where we can order equipment.
Guarantee you, nobody on council is going to vote against fixing those water leaks.
Outstanding. Okay. That's good news to Mr. Morris.
I hear you.
Are we in a position where we can, as soon as we get the budget, the money, can we go ahead with hiring anybody? Do we have
these? Yes, we're advertising. Yes, absolutely.
Lined up, some of them lined up.
They could get the on-the-job training. If you look at Mr. Morris's mustache, it's definitely upturned, so he's smiling. He's ready to go, I promise.
Okay.
He is ready to go.
I noticed when we looked at the Aiken Theater that we're underwriting that, I guess, from the some accommodations tax money and the Sunday alcohol sales. And
we are.
We've never looked into detail of it. I know that I'm under the impression that we get a dollar per ticket. And I raised the issue of how long it's been and whether or not it's appropriate to maybe ask for $2 a ticket or something.
We had actually broached that subject with the Playhouse before you brought it up.
Okay.
And they're not real receptive. So we're having a continuing conversation. Well, of course, you know, it should just be part of the ticket price. So we are discussing that.
Okay, and it's... obviously, the accommodations tax money and Sunday alcohol sales are okay to use to underwrite the...
Yes, because it's like the Newberry Opera House, the Abbeville Opera House, these other venues across the state. It brings in folks from off.
This next thing is only a comment because it doesn't really have an answer. I asked originally about the rent for the units in Crosland Park, and I think the amount was $10,000. And I guess I got to say, I started with a simplistic view of what we were going to try to do in Crosland Park, i.e. I thought we were going to buy a couple of houses, fix them up, and sell them. And we're now at the point where the Aiken Corporation is involved, and that's not a negative comment to the Aiken Corporation.
They've been involved in one house.
Okay.
Right.
Well, we dealt with them on the grants because they can take the grants we can't. Now, here I see CDIC is involved because we're waiting for money from them.
They're collecting rent for us.
How did we get to that point?
Well, with Crosland Park, we have a memorandum of understanding. So we're working with nonprofits, faith community members, volunteer groups to work on Crosland Park together. In fact, we've got a meeting with the whole group slated for later this month.
As I say, there's no answer, but I'm just thoroughly confused. I thought it was a pretty simple project. We were going to identify the number of homes. We were going to go in and get the options on them and fix them and so forth. And now we've got all the churches involved. We've got a bunch of other agencies. We've got attorneys involved. We've got salespeople involved. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even sure how many homes we have out there. You said we sold, I think you said earlier tonight, we're selling number 7.
That's on June 25th. Yeah, they're going to close, and we've purchased 35 homes total.
Someday I'd like to get a summary of what we're doing out there, because for me it's gotten away from me.
And that's fine. We'd be glad to follow up with a report. Again, we're having this meeting the end of this month.
Yeah.
And I think as a result of that meeting, it'd be a great time to give council an update of where we are in the project.
We got home rehabilitation, $5,000, housing development, $10,000, mortgage assistance, $75,000, mm-hmm. another mortgage assistance for $12,000. We're going to sell property for $100,000. Mm-hmm. We didn't lose money. I guess you explained that one.
No, that didn't take into account the grant money that was available for closing. We've corrected that.
And then we got $120,000 for other services, professional services, $10,000 for housing development, $4,000 for mortgage assistance. I mean, this is a lot more than I thought we were getting into, really. I mean, I want to help the folks at Crosland Park, but I just got to tell you, I don't understand where we are in that, so.
And I think when we announced...
This is not much different than where we started in terms of having a holistic approach in terms of solving the problems of folks that lived in substandard housing. We've always had the faith-based institutions involved, Habitat for Humanity, Aiken Housing Authority, the state providing assistance to us. It's always been the presence of all those entities.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand that, but when we started this particular project, I thought it was a particular project that we were going on. I've got questions on the insert that I'll ask later on from the Housing Authority, because I, you know, and again, it sounds like we're doing some of their job. You know, we got to the point of trying to help people with bad credit. Mm-hmm. We were going to work with them. We were going to try to get them to the point where they could buy a house and so forth. And it's just a lot more than I ever expected it would be. I mean, that's I don't need to get into a contest.
Let me just say one word about this.
Please.
When we started this, this was really a partnership between 15 individual groups at mm-hmm. that time. I remember very clearly the night we went out there, everyone signed up. There were 15. So that is not something that's just come about.
Oh, no, I know we've been involved in housing.
Now, some have dropped out, that we've had some new ones, and I personally don't see any bad reason for that. I mean, I don't see that's bad. I think the more folks that we have interested in helping, of course, is a help. And I think the fact of, you know, we've been in this downcline here in the economy, I think that's slowed things down, perhaps. That's why we were able to use Joe Walker on the new building. You know, it went so far, we just stopped until things pick up. And our city manager, I think, came up with the right thought here. Let's pull this gentleman over to work on the new building. And I think he's done a wonderful job. But anyway, a lot of that has been ongoing. Now, the numbers, I don't know that you see the numbers. Do you get a copy of every month?
Yeah, I get the Aiken Corporation report, okay. Which has a good summary.
Yeah, right.
Summary
okay.
out there.
Okay. And we'd all like to see more houses sold
and let me just kind of raise a question about the report that we got from the Housing Authority. My understanding is there's a waiting list of about 800 to get into houses. And I noticed that on the very first page, it's on page 84 of what was given to us, that one of their goals is to decrease dependence. I can't imagine they're going to be able to do anything towards decreasing dependence in this economy. I can just imagine how immobile that waiting list is.
It was about 3,000 at one time.
Was it really? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, with 800, this good people will never get in. And I didn't see any indication here in this report, and again, it's not up to us because we're not the Housing Authority, but I sure wish they'd continue to, they say they're going to continue to make capital improvements, but, mm-hmm. you know, I wish they'd build more houses.
But for the Housing Authority, that's including, I mean, that's the entire Aiken County, it's
yeah.
not just the
yeah.
city.
No, I know that, yeah. No, I know so. That, yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, is there anything else? All right, we've got a motion and a second for approval of the budget. And a show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Now going down to that second item under new business, first reading of an ordinance to annex property at 2805 Catawba Street and to the city limits and to zone it single-family residential. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance to annex to the corporate limits of the city of Aiken certain property owned by Timothy Boyce and located at 2805 Catawba Street and to zone the same residential single family, RS-15. Timothy Boyce owns the property at this address, and he applied to annex it into our city limits. It is contiguous to our existing city limits on its east and south property lines. There is a map in the materials we provided you. The Planning Commission did unanimously approve this annexation, and for council consideration on first reading is this ordinance to annex this property into our city limits.
Okay, sir, thank you very much. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor, that we approve this property at 2005 Catawba Street.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, discussion? No discussion. If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously on first reading. Okay. Reggie, you had an item that you wanted
to... Yes, it's a question I think appropriately directed to the city attorney. For getting subjects on the agenda, what does that require for a councilman to do or citizens to do? Can we request it through the city manager? Do we have to get a certain number of council members to approve an item to be on agenda?
I think you can do one of several, several different things. One is you can bring it up at the beginning of the meeting. The concern there is that there's no public notice of what it is you want to talk about because it wasn't on the agenda. Two is to simply contact the city manager to let him know that you want to place something on the agenda. I don't know that I recall a city council member asking for something to be placed on the agenda and it not being placed on the agenda. And so I think that would be the easiest way to do it. State law allows any council member to propose any ordinance that any city council member wishes to propose at any time. And so you could simply either direct me to prepare an ordinance or ask the city manager to ask me to prepare an ordinance, whatever that, if it's an ordinance type matter that you want city council to consider. So it does depend on what kind of item a city council member wants council to consider. But it should be simple enough to get something like that on the agenda.
Okay. I would suggest this very simply. Go through the city manager and do it in enough time if you can so that we all have information on when we go
through. And I understand on the budget by either Tuesday night or Wednesday for the next meeting, so it's in there and all of that. I just need some clarification on that. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
If we ask for an item on the agenda, it's going to be on the agenda, assuming that we give reasonable time and so forth.
Well, there's no reason
it shouldn't be.
We're an open society here, an open council, certainly, as we should be. But it would be nice to have information beforehand so that we have a chance to review it, so that we just don't get blindsided, you know.
Richard's my third city manager. I don't remember anybody turning any a council member down.
Never has been as far as in 20-some years.
Correct. I'll duly try again.
Huh? Now, have you got one you're going to test us on?
He answered my question, and I'll proceed with the next meeting from there.
Okay.
Next meeting is June 23rd.
Let me just say there have been times that I have mentioned something to Richard, and Richard has said you may want to wait a week or so, and then you'll have that answer already. I've done that. So it's not that I've taken it as a rejection, but he was just warning me that I can ask for something now. He'll have more information. So that, it's this information that you provided to us that is here. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, certainly we don't want to get something like that where we sit up here and we talk about something for an hour and then we can't make a decision because we don't have adequate information. And that's happened before on a couple, fairly recently, where we've had to wait and maybe table something for additional information. So, okay. I mean, that's obvious. But
thank you.
Okay. That's the end of our agenda. However, we need to go into executive.
Well, we had Ms. Miller, I think, has arrived here and had a couple of comments and get an update on the Chucker Creek natural barrier, and she's pretty well represented the neighborhood street there. There's 20, 30 houses since 2005, so I think it'd be appropriate to let her ask her questions here, and that's one of the things I'd ask for.
Certainly.
And I think she's here.
Okay.
Thank you for the opportunity. I'm Judy Miller. I'm a resident of 103 East Pleasant Colony Drive. Last time I spoke before this body was in September. At that time, the developer of the Ridge of Chucker Creek, Ron Monahan, was here. We had a number of residents from our street that were there, and we had I've spoken before the city council when the concept plan was under proposal for acceptance. I spoke before the planning committee when the proposal was before the planning committee. So my question tonight revolves around the item that happened last September when Mr. Monahan said that he would rectify everything and assured the council and the folks in attendance that he would put things back the way they should have been under the concept plan. Somehow the concept plan was changed, and as I presented to you folks last September, if you recall, we have been monitoring what was going on over there, and lots of things were not done per the concept plan. Our major concern is I understand that Mr. Monahan was required to put a bond forth so to deal with rectification of issues that he did not take care of. Then I understand he was given a two-year extension for that bond. And my concern is why, when something should have been taken care of as approved back in 2006, was the delay again given. We are looking for at least the 25-foot undisturbed buffer that was in the concept plan. Additionally, there was a 25-foot equestrian trail, which I understand that has gone by the way. And nothing's been planted, nothing's been done. And the concern of the residents on the street with all the construction that has been going on, the clear cutting that has been done, the tree removal, we're wondering what is the status of this, and what is the status of the 25-foot undisturbed vegetative buffer, and will the developer be required to rectify the situation? I'd appreciate any answers you can give, as the residents on the street would also.
Okay, well, and we appreciate certainly everybody's concern in continuing monitoring the situation. Ms. Miller, I have to take exception with your statement tonight that nothing has been done. Actually, a great deal has been done. The builder planted extensive grass and plant material and did so under the watchful eye of our planning department and city horticulturalist. They did do some measures to rectify a situation with the detention pond. The situation we had last September is we understood that the developer did want to modify the concept plan. But as you recall from the meeting that night, the developer said, no, he wants to follow the conception plan. We're in a situation where we've got the developer continuing to develop the subdivision. We've sent out our zoning official, our city horticulturalist, our city engineer, our planning director, and we also had a meeting with Mr. Ebner, with the developer on site, and he continues to pledge to follow the concept plan. Now, the city attorney will have to speak to that intent, but we have noticed significant improvements out there that may not be to your liking, but they are within our planning director's determination within the requirements of the concept plan. You are correct. There is no equestrian trail there because of the drainage area on the back side of those properties. Our understanding from the developer is that he is going to install the equestrian trail over that once those houses are sold. There were three lots, I think, Mr. Ebner, when we were out there, yet to be sold. So we're on notice from the developer that the intent is to follow the concept plan. Our city attorney's been involved in this matter as well. We followed his advice, so I'll let him speak to your concern tonight, which certainly appreciate you sharing.
Well, if I may, before we hear from the attorney, is there any kind of a list that you have of the things that he's done since last September? Because I would like specifically to bring that back to the residents and say,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. If you
that
could,
would be very helpful.
Yes, if you could give your contact information to the city clerk, mm-hmm. We'll be more than happy to send you the follow-up letters that we've done in the confirmations that we have of the measures that the developer has been taking.
Happy to do that.
Thank yes, ma'am. That's no problem at all.
It may be a matter of semantics, and people may see this the way they want to see it. And I'll admit that up front. But I believe it was last fall when the performance bond came due.
Mm-hmm.
Any developer that develops a subdivision in the city of Aiken, as part of the consideration for being allowed to develop that subdivision, has to execute a performance bond in favor of the city so that the city has some assurances that what he says will be done will actually be done. Okay? I've been doing this for a little over 16 years working for the city. And during that time frame, we've had to call a performance bond one time. And that was with the Summit Industrial Park across the street from Aiken High School.
Yep.
Summit Business Center. And in that particular case, the developer actually, if he didn't go bankrupt, he got real close to it and was not able to finish the project as designed. The city was able to go to the bank, call the letter of credit, and the city was able to do the work. I think Mr. Pierce, our city engineer, Mr. Morris, I think all of the city staff would tell you they would prefer not to be in the development business if they had a choice. That's not really what they're built to do. You talked about the city gave him an extension of time to comply with the concept plan. The way I look at it with my lawyer hat on is the developer agreed to renew the performance bond for an additional two-year period to give him the time to complete the concept plan, which was approved by city council. And what that does is it keeps the city, the city's alternative at that point would have been to call the bond and then get into the business of completing the development of that subdivision. And the city really did not want to do that at that time. So I look at it a little differently. The developer actually agreed to provide the city with an additional 2 years of financial assurance that what he agreed to do at the beginning when city council approved it would actually occur. And that was the two-year extension for the performance bond.
Can you explain the specifics of the performance bond?
Larry knows he may not be able to discuss it tonight. I don't mean to put him on the spot.
Let me just ask a general question.
The performance bond requires him, when that subdivision is complete, it should look like the concept plan that you guys approved. That's what the performance bond generally requires.
I understand, but from what you just said, if we call the bond and we're going to go to some financial institution and get a pot of money, are we assured that pot of money that we're going to get is going to put the 25-foot barrier between us and Woodside? And
Larry did tell me when we were having these discussions with Mr. Ebner and Mr. Monahan and all of those guys that he had done an analysis of the numbers and that the numbers were sufficient to make the property look like the concept plan.
So
there should be plenty of money there to do.
There's no 25-foot buffer there now.
The buffer has been disturbed. There's nothing that's been planted. Again, back in 2006, and again last September, when Mr. Monahan was assuring us that all the plantings would be done as they should have been, we haven't seen evidence of that. We see straight through. There's lots of equipment and things that are kept in the yards of the homes across the fence. No plantings down at my end, so we're looking straight through at less than attractive yards. All of that was assured that wouldn't occur because the appropriate plantings that were listed very specifically, in my opinion, on the concept plan. So we haven't seen any of that.
No, since that September meeting, now they have gone out there and planted plant material. Our horticulturalist and planning director have looked at that and approved it.
I think that
they have planted.
Maybe in some, I'll have to go look
in
some
areas.
And again,
if you give us your address, we can double check what you're talking about against what was put
in the end of the street.
If I may interject, I think there's two issues, and it was discussed at length back in September.
It was.
One of them is a 25-foot undisturbed buffer. And I reread the minutes several times in the last couple of minutes from that meeting and the previous meetings. And the issue for one set of neighbors is a 25-foot undisturbed buffer. Mm-hmm. And as Mr. Monahan said at the in September, the neighbors on the Chucker Creek side are not unhappy with not having a equestrian trail. And they're not unhappy with the ditch, and he's promised to do something for them to fix that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the thing that is disturbing to all of us, the undisturbed buffer, could be fixed at any time with a with any of our local landscape people. It's not a high-tech job, and I think that's the issue that we need to concentrate on, is the 25-foot undisturbed natural. And the rest of it he can fix in due time, which is what he's agreed to do with the bond. And that's what was discussed back in September. So I think we need to push the issue to get the 25-foot buffer done, which doesn't impede his progress for developing it. He's put the sewer lines in, the water lines all tied in across the road. So I think that's what our what we should look at as a council, to say, okay, come on, let's fix the 25-foot buffer, you know, hire Coal Creek or Rock Hill and go out and plant the 339 trees, which the City Hall Courts has agreed to do and all that. So
what is the holdup on doing that? Just what you said.
Our understanding is that, they did do that. They did plant.
Well, in some places, obviously.
He did.
Ms. Miller's not seen it, but
we'll go back out there again, Mayor. It's no problem at all. But, you know, again, with the concept plan and the developer coming in not wanting to change the plan, and with him going out and doing additional work out there, there is progress towards meeting the goals of the concept plan, and that's why we had the zoning official, the horticulturist, go out. And we can look at it.
Do we have a timetable here when it's going to be finished?
That's what Garrett can answer.
That's the
it's not the 2 years, I hope.
Well, I mean, that's when he's got to have it completed by.
Well, but let's talk about the
example I give to for a different situation would be the concept plan that was approved when Woodside was developed. You know, when Woodside was developed, they had a concept plan that was approved by City Council that had two 18-hole golf courses on it. Mm-hmm. Well, the day they opened the gates, City Council wasn't telling them, you've got to have those two 18-hole golf courses done within a certain period of time. You know, there was an approach to how that got done.
There is not a timetable except for the 2 years.
There's not a calendar that says you've got to have a horse trail by such and such a day. The performance bond is what gives us that deadline.
Okay.
If he doesn't have it done by the time the performance bond comes due,
did we make a mistake then by agreeing to that?
What we need, what we're interested in, let's get off the horse trail and get on the natural barrier.
It's the same analysis.
Well, it may be the same analysis, but there's nothing that keeps the 25-foot natural area from being restored today. He's a couple of years away from finishing the houses and screwing around with the horse trail, but he's not with the natural area.
Yeah, but
I think that's our approach. And they planted a lot of trees in the last couple of weeks, and I'll look again.
Right. And again, it might be he was here last September. We've had the meeting with him out there. He was telling us about three more lots being sold. We've got staff. We've got a city manager. If you want to go back out there, if anybody from council wants to go back out there, we could all take a look at it another time. But every message we've got is that he wants to comply with the concept plan, and he's taking actions that look like he's making efforts to actually comply with the plan.
Can we find out, though, when he intends to get that area that Ms. Miller says that has not been done? Let's ask Ron when he intends to do it, and that we would like for him to do it as soon as he can do it.
Yeah. And earlier this spring, he had three lots to sell, and then he was going to get it all done. So okay. We can follow up on that, Mayor. It's a good time to do it.
Just as a point of information, if I may, we started monitoring this back in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
This has been ongoing since Mr. Monahan, when we had no fence, and it was all treed area, acres and acres across the street from us. He was hammering in that 5x8 plywood sign saying no trespassing. I went over, this was in October of 2004, started the discussion. Oh, I just bought this land, what are you going to put up here? The only thing, if you recall, he said to me at that time, and I reported to you in September, the only thing I cannot put up here is a brothel and a Walmart. And that's how he began this whole thing. We have been on this since 2004 because of the negative effect it would have on our property values, in our opinion. I have been monitoring that because I live right there when the pipes were put in by the wrong size, if you recall. The concept plan called for a pipe size of 36 inches. We went over and it was measured to be 18 inches. The detention pond was put in. All of these things that, in our opinion, negatively impact the property values on our side of the street. and now it's 2012. So I appreciate you wanting to encourage development, but also we appreciate taxpayers that have put money into the city already and hope that our investment has been protected. And in this case, we think we've been let down. So we appreciate you going out again, looking at what he's done, and if you will, in my lifetime, hopefully things will be done.
Well, he's got a two-year deadline.
Well, Mr. Mayor, I think what we're really talking
about. Thank you, Ms. Miller.
There's a drop-dead date. I mean, 2 years from now, like the
last fall.
The solicitor says, you know, they have to have it all done.
Right.
But is it possible we incorporate some kind of a timeline or a perk chart into our concept plans? And that way, you know, let the contractor take a look at it. It's not that complicated. He can make a judgment on what he can do earlier. But, I mean, all of a sudden there's going to be a eureka 2 years from now. Everything should be in place. I think the contractor should actually be able to say, okay, 12 months downstream we'll have this, 14 months downstream we'll have this. Just some kind of timeline. And then, you know, the residents aren't going to be upset. Now, if they don't meet the timeline, I don't know exactly what pressure we can put on them.
It just depends on how we organize.
Depends on how the bond is organized.
Right.
You know, maybe hitting them with a few penalties along the way and, you know, get our own contractor to finish that. I guess that's what happens to the performance bond. We get somebody else to do what he promised to do.
We did. It was a letter of credit that we called. We actually put in paved roads and put in curbs.
I don't know. It's just food for thought. I don't know if we want to get that involved and that detailed into other people's business, but if we want to set up a timeline the next time we approve a concept plan of some sort, you know.
I still have two questions on this project. One of them I'm thoroughly confused with. I get the sense that although the concept plan requires equestrian trails, and everybody is happy with no equestrian trails, and if that's the case, then why don't we approve a change to the concept plan to match what everybody agrees now is going to be done?
And that's exactly where I was last September, and the developer came in and said no, he was going to put the trail in, so he didn't want the change.
Well, you see, like everybody doesn't agree to it there.
Sounds like there's some game playing. My second question and last question is, repeat of my previous question because I don't have the amount. We've got this performance bond.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is the amount of this performance bond in this particular case, if he walks away in 2 years, is there going to be enough money to build the equestrian trail that he insists he's going to build and to ensure that we have the 25-foot buffer that these folks were promised and have been fighting with for 8 years?
I mean, I can get you that specific answer.
I'd like to know the amount of money the performance bond is.
We could do that.
And I think it's reasonable for us to try to determine how much that performance bond should be for, given that he's agreed. I mean, the concept plan is it's a win-win for him and the city. You know, he skirts some rules legitimately, and we get some control. But this one seems to have gone awry, and it's a shame these residents have to put up with this.
Richard, are you going to make direct contact with... Okay.
I would.
Thank
you, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah. Again, you're going to leave your contact information, Ms. Miller, with our clerk. Thank you.
I think this discussion we've had is a very good one, unfortunately. I'm glad we had it. But again, it's one of those things. Had we had some prior information about maybe some of the concerns or that have been expressed here in the last few minutes, I think we could have had some information.
This has not been a secret, Mr. Mayor.
That's my own personal opinion. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings or anything, but the more we know in advance, the more we can do. And yes, ma'am. Would you please? And I know it's been since 2004.
I've spoken before the council. I've spoken before the planning committee, so... Just to respond to the comment, if you had some prior information, you've had it. So not to be fresh,
but
I've
been
here through many, many meetings as the residents of the street. So whatever you can do now to help us, we would greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, and that is
why
we continue to follow up with the developer. We'll follow up another time. It's fine. We just met on this about 3 months ago. So we'll follow up.
Okay, we need to go into executive session to talk about a potential contractual matter. Do we have a motion and a second?
Don't move.
Second.
Second. Show of hands, please.
Pass this unanimous.
I can't believe it. Reggie. He's after you.
Are we back on the record?
Yes. We're coming out of executive session. We need a vote to come out.
I move to come out of executive session.
Okay. Second.
All in favor? Show of hands. Passes unanimously. Council went to executive session to receive information on a contractual matter. As we said earlier, we're now adjourned from that council meeting.
Thank you, everybody.
Good evening there, sir.
You got your petition going to?
No, sir.
I want. Looking at your table.